Yeah, and I wonder if how many people who are thinking about NDEs and hearing about life reviews will in fact be wondering, will it be airing my dirty laundry? Actually, in a way that you'll like least, I do believe. But it's a fascinating topic, and I was saying earlier that for the non-believer, it's easy to dismiss, but for the believer, it's really a fascinating confirmation, because I think that those of us who have a worldview that there's absolutely something else, somewhere in the back of our minds, since nobody's really come back in the flesh in our kitchen, there's that dark, disturbing doubt that, is this it? And of course, the NDE becomes a prescription for hope, and that's why I think so many people are fascinated by that, and hopefully you will be too for the next couple hours when you talk with Jeffrey Long. Jeffrey is a radiation oncologist in New Mexico. That's right, MD. And he has founded the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. You can check nderf.org and a couple other websites too, adcrf.org and oberf.org, which you can check out. But it's interesting that nderf.org is the largest database of its kind. Over 1,000 experiences have been posted. And we'll talk about the commonalities, the differences, and probably everything you want to know, and maybe a few things that you won't want to know. We'll find out about that with NDEs coming up with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM, and Dr. Jeffrey Long was mentioned in the cover story of Newsweek magazine this past week, Back to Life, The Science of Reviving the Dead. And it was interesting because the gist of the story was that doctors are realizing that there is much more to know about the process of death physically than they realized. And I had to kind of laugh at that because I thought, boy, if they think there's much more to know about it physically, they haven't even started to see how much more there is to know about it spiritually. And this really brings out the age-old question, which is, are we bodies that happen to have a consciousness, or are we consciousness that happens to have a body? And I think to some degree that's answered in the whole NDE paradigm. Dr. Jeffrey Long, welcome to Coast AM.
Well, good evening, Raleigh. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, when I was getting a bunch of questions, and boy, I've got a bunch of questions, I was talking to someone earlier who said the obvious, and it never even occurred to me. They said, what's an NDE? And I said, no, there's nobody who doesn't know that. And I realized, you know, it's a great place to start in terms of what defines an NDE.
Well, that's a very important question. NDE is an abbreviation for near-death experience. And among researchers, there's some different viewpoints as to exactly what a near-death experience is. But fundamentally, you have to be near-death. That is, you have to nearly die as a result of some severe physical compromise. And you have to have an experience. In other words, there has to be something other than unconsciousness. These people that have an NDE come back with something that happened. Now, the definition I use for research purposes is a lucid experience associated with perceived consciousness apart from the body occurring at the time of actual or threatened imminent death. That's what I've called a near-death experience.
Okay. In most cases, is it a case where people's heart has stopped, they're pretty much pronounced dead?
It's all over the board, but these are people that have, by my research definition, such severe compromise that they are very close medically to death. It's been very helpful for me to have my MD training background to assess the experiences that are shared on my website. I won't call them an NDE until they're very, very close to death, medically speaking, based on my understanding of the medical circumstances they share that led to their experience. So these people, very often they've had their heart stopped, their breathing has stopped, most of them, or at least they're unconscious as a result of their physical compromise.
Okay, now you mentioned being an MD, and that begs the question. Most MDs, when you see their bios, it lists hobbies like golf or sailing. Maintaining the largest website chronicling near-death experiences to many physicians is out there. What do your colleagues think of this?
You know, it's interesting. Of course, most physicians really don't know enough about near-death experience to have their own independent opinion. They'll generally believe it can't be. They'll put it in the category of the paranormal, i.e. they can't believe it. And yet it's interesting, Raleigh, when I sit down and talk with my colleagues, like over a supper at some time, and they become aware that I'm interested in near-death experience, and I explain the evidence that led to why I believe near-death experience is for real, just about every doctor I've talked to one-on-one or one-on-two comes away going, yeah, You're right, I get it. I mean, that makes sense. The evidence is profoundly strong for the reality of near-death experiences. But the problem is physicians are very busy. They tend to focus on keeping up with their medical reading and taking care of patients. So they really don't have the time, unfortunately, to sit down and look at the facts and really come up with their own independent opinion about the reality of near-death experience.
Well, and there's still got to be that ostracization among some of scientists who will, you know, say it's baloney and easily dismiss it. So with that in mind, here you are. You were propelled to go to medical school. Had you had an NDE experience, or what caused you to say, shall we say, separate from the general school curriculum?
Well, sure. It all started, I first heard about near-death experience when I was doing my residency training in radiation oncology, and that's the medical specialty I practice. It's the use of radiation to treat cancer. One day I was looking through a very prominent medical journal, actually the Journal of the American Medical Association, and quite by accident I found an article titled Near-Death Experience. And immediately I was surprised. I said, if you're near death, you can't have an experience, because if you're unconscious at the time that your heart stops, by the very definition of unconscious, you have no consciousness. You cannot have an experienced or an organized remembrance at that point in time. And yet here was an amazing article, first time I'd ever heard about it, that talked about hundreds and hundreds of people that had these experiences. The experiences were remarkably consistent, and I was immediately fascinated. So I stopped what I was doing and read some of the bibliography in the article and was astonished. And I remember vividly thinking, almost prophetically, gosh, I wonder why there's not more research on that topic. So that got me interested. But then several years later, a very interesting thing happened. Had a friend and his wife were visiting in Iowa City, Iowa, where I was doing my residency training, and we were discussing over supper, and my friend's wife just mentioned casually that she'd had a cardiac arrest while she was undergoing an operation, and mm-hmm. she had died due to an allergic reaction. But she said it in a very odd and mysterious way. And I remembered the article I read, and I said, geez, do I dare ask her?
Yes.
Yeah, so finally I got up the courage, and I said, well, did something happen after you died on the operating room table? And she said, why, yes. And she went on to describe the first near-death experience I'd ever heard in my life. She told me, even though she was under general anesthesia and her heart stopped, there's mm-hmm. two separate and independent reasons she could not possibly have had a conscious experience. Right. But here's what she described. Her consciousness rose up from her body. She saw the frantic resuscitation efforts going on within the operating room. And then, this is unusual, but we do find near-death experiences that describe this. Her point of consciousness actually left the operating room and was centered in the nursing station, where she could see and hear what the nurses were doing in the hospital at the exact moment that her body was in the operating room coded and mm-hmm. under general anesthesia. Then she had a fairly typical near-death experience where she passed through a tunnel, encountered a very mystical, loving presence of light, had a life review, and had a very remarkable and positive near-death experience. This is the first time, Raleigh, I had ever heard someone share a personal experience with me like that, and I was absolutely flabbergasted. I remember thinking, if this is for real, if this truly happens, this really changes my view of the universe. And so that started on my quest to discover the truth.
Interesting. So what you're telling me is prior to this, you had not really thought that we survived our bodies?
You know, I didn't know. Certainly scientifically, you know, unfortunately and medically, we encounter people that die and they certainly look dead to me, and it certainly looks like there's no life. They're declared dead and they go through the funeral thing. And I guess I wanted to believe, I think like all our listeners, I wanted to hope, I wanted to somehow find some reason to believe that was evidential to me that we survive bodily death, that we go on, that there is hope. And, of course, I think we all wanted to do that. And yet, I was a scientist and a physician. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, even one person telling me that is not convincing. I really want to study that. I want to see if this is a pattern that repeats itself again and again. I knew medically and scientifically what's true, what is real, will repeat itself and have a consistent pattern. And so that's why I set up the website. In a way, Raleigh, I was sort of one of the major skeptics. I mean, I said, prove it.
Okay,
I was going to have people share their experiences. throw it out to the world. People would be posted anonymously. They wouldn't receive any payment for sharing their NDE with me. And that was the sternest standard of evidence that I was going to use to study near-death experience and determine for myself, do these things really happen?
So the site really was more initially of a replication vehicle, so you could try to apply some type of scientific logic to what others would call illogical.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The near-death experiencers can fill out a form on the website, and it's very careful. They're very carefully worded. It's a true scientific study. We could archive and study both yes, no, uncertain, and no response type responses to questions, as well as narrative responses to questions. So it was scientifically designed because I wanted to know the truth. I wanted to know, is near-death experience for real? And that was the mechanism by which I answered that question.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in the process of convincing yourself, you also created a database which answers a lot of questions that not only all of us have, but NDEers have as well, about some of the commonality of experience. Now, when you were reading this JAMA article, about what year was that?
It was about circa 1982.
Okay, so you, at that point, did you go back and get some of the Raymond Moody or Elizabeth Kubler-Ross or any of the other writings that were out on it?
Yes, I started reading Raymond Moody's groundbreaking book, Life After Life, in 1975, where the term near-death experience was coined. So I just started doing a little bit of reading, got a little bit of background information, and that launched this research effort that the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation is.
Now, with all, and you're talking like over 1,000 individuals, so you've really got a treasure trove of data about this that's not really available anywhere else. And the first thing that came to mind when I, you know, it boggles the mind to think about that many experiences chronicled, because it's going to give us some real answers here. Is there a point beyond which no NDE has gone? In other words, you hear about people who will say, I got the life review and I talked to, you know, either the ascended masters or, you know, my long-lost brother, Theodore, or whatever. But most of them have been either compelled to come back or have had to make the choice to come back. In terms of the journey to the other side, at what point is the furthest we've gotten in these?
Well, there's several different things that can be very close to the end point. And exactly as you said, Raleigh, very often the end point of the experience is where they're given a choice to return to Earth, or very often told that they have to return to Earth. Now, what fascinated me is that the great majority of people that have near-death experiences, when they're given the choice of returning to Earth, don't want to return.
No, of course not, because they're no longer in pain and they're feeling good. In fact, they're feeling beyond what would be known as orgasmic here. They don't, you know, unless they have family or loved ones or some pressing reason, who the heck wants to go back to the broken body in the hospital?
And, you know, that's the shocking thing. Most of these, in fact, nearly all of them do have loved ones on Earth. They have family, they have children, they have friends. And yet, because of where they're at, they realize, amazingly, that they're actually home. Their home is where they're at during their near-death experience. Home is not Earth. They understand that with every fiber of their being. The positive, intense, loving, peaceful feelings is absolutely unearthly. They're often in the presence of their deceased loved ones. Very joyous, overwhelmingly joyous reunions are generally what is described when these things happen. So they are truly and literally, in every sense of the word, in heaven. And it's very, very difficult for them to realize that they need to leave heaven to come back to the earthly existence that we have here.
Now, when you mention that, it touches on something else, I don't know if it's part of your belief system, but while people seem to report they recognize things they knew on the other side, and sometimes they recognize things they don't know here, is there any evidence of people who are reunited with things from a previous life, a form of wisdom? That's the first half of the question, and the second half of the question is, what's the purpose of coming back with no memory of this?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think, to answer your last question first, I think lots of times during a near-death experience, they're given profound wisdom. Once in a great while, they are shown what's called universal knowledge. It's as if they're given all the knowledge of how the universe works, all the reasons why we're on Earth, why there's pain, suffering, evil. All the answers are given to them, and yet when they come to Earth, almost invariably they don't retain much or any of the knowledge. Well, I could answer that from the point of view of one near-death experiencer who said that it was like an ocean of knowledge that was trying to fit in the teacup of my brain. And you simply can't retain all that knowledge. It's just simply unearthly. It's just simply beyond what we have a mental capacity to assimilate. And so it's forgotten because of that. But that's part of it. Certainly, people do encounter some special wisdom and come back with some incredible insights. And I guess that was one of the real validating aspects of the reality of near-death experience to me personally, was the consistency of these spiritual beliefs and what people encountered. Absolutely amazing, and not necessarily what we've all been taught in conventional religious training. And yet here it was, as I kept reviewing near-death experiences week after week after month after year, just amazing consistency.
There's this belief by many people that it's almost like a passion play, that what you expect is what you'll get when you cross over. In other words, if you've been a devout Christian, maybe you feel you'll be greeted by Jesus. If you've been a follower of Islam, maybe you think it's Allah or, Lord Krishna for the Hindus, and on it goes. Is there any report from individuals who were fairly religious that, oh my God, someone from another religion showed up?
That's pretty rare, although it has happened. I want to address a common misconception about near-death experience, that being what you expect to happen in the experience. Isn't that what actually happens? Well, the answer is generally no. There's remarkable similarities of near-death experiences between children and adults. Children haven't had the time to develop religious beliefs or particular values. Even very young children have near-death experiences that are much more similar to adults than not. And then secondly, we've had a small series, about 14 near-death experiences that have been shared from cultures, non-Western cultures, all around the world. And to my abject astonishment, these near-death experiences are strikingly similar to the NDEs that occur in Western civilization. So your prior life experience, or even what you expect to happen during the NDE, is generally not what happens. And in fact, we ask near-death experiencers on the web form, we have a particular question that says, was this experience consistent with your prior beliefs? And the overwhelming majority of people responding to that say no.
All right, so we'll leave it right there, with most people probably saying it wasn't consistent with anything I could even imagine. So, Dr. Jeffrey Long, NDERF.org, a great place to start, and it's a great place for us to stop, and we'll continue as we talk about NDEs. Oh, according to this, I have 2 minutes. Sorry about that. I have 2 minutes, said Dan, and I'm reading something very wrong here. So I got more questions. Good, and you got more time. All right, Dr. Long. I am fascinated also by the idea that there is a small percentage of NDEs that, well, frankly, think they're going to hell.
Now, that's correct. The overwhelming majority of near-death experiences are typically understood, that being very pleasant, transcendent, beautiful experiences, profound experiences. There's an extremely small percentage, probably around 1 or 2%, that actually have hellish imagery. And a lot of these near-death experiences involving hellish imagery, it's not just the entire experience that may start that way and then change into a much more positive, pleasant experience, but properly understood, even those frightening, as we call them, NDEs, are certainly part of the spectrum and can certainly be extremely positive and valuable for the person having that experience.
Okay, so let me ask you, we talk about the commonalities and the pleasant ones, that there are many, of the small percentage of hellish images. Are there commonalities there?
There's a lot less commonality, and that's what's interesting. There's a lot more diversity in terms of what they run into. The imagery is very, very different. The pattern of the experience may be a little bit more likely to skip around, sort of like a dream, where a dream you're in one place and then you're in another place. Mm-hmm. Whereas with classic near-death experiences, the pleasant ones, they tend to be highly logically ordered and consistent and very logical and sequential from event to event,
right,
but less so for the other hellish experiences.
We'll leave it right there and get back to whether those hellish experiences are dreams or not and how you tell the difference, because the lack of logic sequence, you normally think, oh, that was just a bad dream. Well, an NDE or a dream, are they real? Well, you'll read over 1,000 of them at NDERF.org, and this time it is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. And with Dr. Jeffrey Long, NDERF.org, and I was just trying to navigate fast blasts here, and my apologies for probably losing half of them, but it's fascinating that a topic like this comes up and virtually everybody has input, and I think that's terrific, and I encourage anybody who has interest in this, particularly firsthand experience, to add to the database to Dr. Jeffrey Long's. It's the largest site out there, NDERF.org, and some of the questions I will try to ask. They are very, very good ones, to say the least, and thanks to the group of people who were listening and checked in, including all the gang. Alan and his buddies at WHAS, we're thrilled to have you in Louisville. But we were just getting to the nitty-gritty of the bad stuff. Because, you know, I think when you talk about NDEs, particularly with people who maybe have some dark, deserved doubts in their own mind, it's, well, what if I go the other way? So when people do, the disjointed images, is that an NDE? We'll find out and more with Dr. Jeffrey Long and Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. So you got a couple things going on here. One, when you talk about near-death experiences, which we are on Coast to Coast AM, I'm Raleigh James, and I'm talking to Dr. Jeffrey Long, NDERF.org, ADCRF.org, and OBERF.org, and that'll keep you reading for quite a while. But one, of course, is, are you doubting that there's more to this earthly veil of tears? And the other is, well, what if I can go the wrong way? Now, Dr. Long, it's nice to see that it's a low 1% or 2%, but when you mentioned that the recollections of the grisly images, if you will, are disjointed, that leads me to wonder, how are you sure they're NDEs?
Yeah, sure. Well, certainly they're not dreams. We actually asked on the survey of our near-death experiencers, was the experience dreamlike in any way? And for both the people that had pleasant and the rare frightening NDEs, not only was the response to that web form question no, but absolutely no. So certainly the people that have these experiences don't think they're anything like dreams, but the most convincing evidence that the frightening experiences are real NDEs is that they occur with the same degree of physical compromise as pleasant near-death experiences. And when you have a cardiac arrest, within about 10 seconds after that time, after a cardiac arrest occurs and your heart stops beating, of course, immediately when your heart stops beating, blood ceases to flow to the brain. And within about 10 seconds after blood stops flowing to the brain, the electroencephalogram, which is a measure of brain electrical activity, goes absolutely flat. It's absolutely, at that point in time, impossible to have a conscious experience. And yet, that's the time that people have near-death experiences, be they pleasant, frightening, or even hellish, are at that point in time. So no question, these even the hellish or frightening ones, while they may be different in terms of the pattern somewhat from pleasant experiences, are absolutely NDEs, and all major researchers agree.
It's fascinating to really look at it from the bigger picture because, of course, again, the skeptic can dismiss it in any way they choose because their worldview is that it's all hocus-pocus, those who are true non-believers. But for individuals who are believers, yet, like I said, that doubt, one of the things, and it's a nagging doubt and probably was in the back of your mind for a while, is, well, yeah, it seems pretty real, but maybe it's some type of psychotic illusion, that final act of a play before going dark, some cruel synaptic response. What's the proof that it's not?
Okay. There's a variety of levels of proof. One of the strongest levels of proof is, well, what is it that people see and hear when they're having a near-death experience? Is it real? Very typically, early in the near-death experience, consciousness separates from the body, and as in the example I shared earlier, they can often see often the frantic resuscitation efforts going on, and they can often see and hear what's going on in terms of earthly events while they've actually coded. And so a critical question is, if what they see is real, then that strongly suggests the reality of near-death experience, where if it's dreamlike, a hallucination, then what they see should be distorted, an illusion. And what's been absolutely fascinating to me is that virtually all, and we're talking about 98-99% of near-death experiences, what they see or hear during the time they're having their experience is absolutely real. In fact, often the near-death experiencer goes back and tries to validate what they saw. And again, 98-99% of the time, what they saw or heard is absolutely right on, including information they couldn't have known. We've had near-death experiencers come back with the serial number of the resuscitation machine that they had. There was a published in one of the major medical journals an article of a person who was observed to be in a deep coma after cardiac arrest, and a nurse took out his dentures, as they should do, and put them in a particular drawer of the resuscitation cart that was there at the time of the resuscitation effort, and the patient was able to see that. But time and time again, what people see and hear is invariably accurate. What's interesting to me medically is that resuscitations, when someone codes, especially if it's unexpected, it's really not like TV rally. It's often frantic, disorganized. It's chaotic. There can be unprofessional behavior. That's what these people describe that have near-death experience. I mean, it's not anything that they could have known other than sort of like my own personal experience who's attended codes. I've been there. I've seen what it's like. And that's the flavor of cardiac arrests and codes that follow as described by NDEers. There's no way that they could know that unless they actually and really saw what went on while they were clinically dead.
Yeah, of course it would be frantic because from the standpoint of the rescue crew, they're looking at precious seconds at which to save someone, and every second counts. Now, that brings to mind that on the earthly plane, that body that's lying there in whatever, a weakened state, to say the least, we're talking minutes, usually, I would assume, where when that individual returns, they sometimes have hours worth of information.
Yeah, and that's really fascinating. And that raises a very good point. In other words, their conscious remembrance certainly can span over just a few minutes. But for near-death experiencers that have a more transcendent or detailed experience, you're absolutely right. Often they can have hours of experience. And a good example of that is a life review. That happens, about 20-25% of near-death experiences. And sometimes it can be what we call a panoramic life review. During those minutes that they're physically coded and people are frantically trying to bring that back to life, during these very detailed life reviews, they can see every aspect of their life from their time of conscious remembrance right up to the time of the life-threatening event that caused their code, and they can see every detail. And sometimes in these life reviews, not only do they see or relive their entire life, but in addition to that, startlingly, they can actually understand or sense how people they interacted felt as a consequence of their interaction with them. I mean, incredibly detailed information. A remarkable aspect of near-death experiences, and certainly very consistent with what near-death experiencers share, the substantial majority saying that their conscious functioning during a near-death experience is actually at a much, much higher level than their everyday earthly conscious functioning.
Yeah, that idea that their life review includes the concept that they feel someone else's pain, as it were, that the reactions that others had to their actions is fascinating, because the things that I've heard is many people have come back stunned that they hurt people in certain instances. Sometimes, of course, we know it when we've done something that's hurt another. But the thing that I've read repeatedly, and maybe you will have too, is that many people are stunned at the reactions they get.
Oh, it really is. And here's an example for your listeners. One NDEer was an adult, but again, as part of this panoramic life review, Raleigh, you see everything. And she saw herself as a 3-year-old. Her father was bathing her, and she thought it would be great fun to jump out of the tub and run through the house dripping wet and naked. And she saw herself, again, reliving an event that actually occurred, which she'd forgotten about. Right. But there she was, running through the house. But all of a sudden, she sensed and knew what her father felt like. And at that point, and that point only, she knew that her father had had a very difficult day at work. He was very tired. And although she was having fun and assumed her father was having fun at this game, she grew to understand from reliving that event through her father's perspective that her father was not having fun. This was very burdensome, very difficult, and very negative for him to go chasing down her daughter. But that's just a microcosm of the kind of things that people learn when they come back. And this certainly can be one of the most profoundly transformative, positively transformative aspects of NDEs. People come back and go, wow, I didn't realize the influence I have on other people and how significant and important it is.
Yeah, we're all interconnected, of course. Back to that for a moment. When I was mentioning other lives or past lives, has anybody come back from an NDE, and when they've talked about who they've seen somebody that they knew but not in this life?
Occasionally, to relatively rarely, people will have, when they do life reviews, they'll actually believe that they've seen prior lives, and that's a fascinating when that's discussed. They say they retain their same personality, and they encounter people, of course, as part of that, that they haven't actually met in this life.
Mm-hmm.
At other aspects, they have life reviews where they meet somebody that they didn't know in this life, but they seemed familiar. They may often appear in a cluster of deceased relatives, and yet here is an individual that they didn't know. This is fairly common in near-death experiences, that they'll come back and there will be a very, very familiar being, but years later, when they're going through, for example, old photographs, there will be grandfather or grandmother who died before they were born, and all of a sudden they go, aha, that is the individual that I encountered in my near-death experience. And that, while startling, is, you know, welcome to my world. That's a fairly common thing in near-death experiences.
Now, you mentioned the transformation. What percentage of people have actually been given information about their purpose here or their future here?
Well, you know, interestingly, that's actually a study topic of mine. Is, you know, I've become convinced of the reality of near-death experience. I'm now looking a little deeper into what information are we getting from near-death experiences mm-hmm. that is relevant not only to the NDEer, but could be relevant to the entire world. And interestingly, over and over and over, we're hearing a lot of near-death experiencers come back with startlingly consistent comments about why we're here on Earth. What exactly is our earthly purpose?
Well, what is it?
Well, and that's a very good question. There's no simple, of course there's no simple answer that applies to everybody. Some people come back, well, I guess better back up. The very first and most significant response to that question is we all do have a purpose. There's no question that our earthly existence is absolutely extremely important. It is purposeful and it is significant, and that seems to be true for every single one of us. That is the overwhelmingly consistent message that we're getting from near-death experience accounts. Just some examples of things, and this is some direct quotes from near-death experiencers, and I quote, "The kindness or evil we do to each other causes people's lives to be changed forever. We affect possible generations to come. Even a harsh word could cause a person on the edge to turn away from God. So live it right, folks, and just give love and understanding," unquote. So over and over, people emphasize the importance of interpersonal connections, the importance of loving connections. Family, and especially children, are mentioned over and over and over. Relatively uncommon, people are given a specific direction, like a specific job or a task. Education seems to be extremely important. For instance, another NDEer, and I quote, "I learned that the life here was merely a method of increasing knowledge and experience for your actual existence," unquote. So one of the strongest validating aspects of the reality of NDE is the overwhelmingly consistent type of responses near-death experiencers come back with regard to the concept of why are we all here on Earth?
It's fascinating because I also saw somewhere on your site, in fact, I think it was the writings, and you had recommended this, so I had read the whole thing by Pim Van Lommel about the continuity of our consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And the part that really kind of sent a chill down my spine was, unexpectedly, we found that significantly more patients who had an NDE, especially a deep experience, died within 30 days of CPR.
Yeah. I think a lot of that may be due to the fact that there is a trend for people that are, if you will, closer to death to have a deeper experience. People that have, you know, nearly died, but it's not a severe life-threatening event. Maybe their time of unconsciousness is only brief, as in, you know, seconds to less than a minute. These people are, of course, more likely to have a more superficial near-death experience. So I wouldn't overread into that finding by Dr. Van Lommel. I think that's probably more why that finding occurred. I don't think it implies that a deeper NDE increases your risk for death. And in fact, people that have a near-death experience, we're talking about, you know, coming back with information about our earthly purpose, overwhelmingly they come back with the impression that our earthly existence is important, that life is important, that we want to try to live. People that had their near-death experience, for example, by suicide, very rarely ever try suicide again, much less likely among people who tried suicide who did not have a near-death experience. So NDEs are overwhelmingly life-enhancing, not life-diminishing.
As well as learning things about an individual's specific life or specific future, have any of these NDEs come back with, I don't really want to say predictions, but with thoughts on things that would occur if mass consciousness did not change that in fact did occur?
Oh, you mean like a view of future, you know,
yes,
possible future life, yeah, events?
Future events that would, you know, affect us all, i.e., you know, 9/11 or anything, a cataclysmic earthquake or you name it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I've been very interested in the concept of future events that near-death experiencers bring back. You know, there certainly are some people that see into the distant future, and some of these during their near-death experiences are fascinating. Raleigh, this was an amazing account once. There was a near-death experiencer who described being centuries ahead of time, and the near-death experiencer was surprised to see people talking into clamshells. And this is an NDE that happened about 20 years ago. And yet, when they flashed forward to centuries from now, as part of their experience, he didn't understand that. Why are people talking into clamshells? Well, years and years later, cell phones were discovered, and all of a sudden he said, aha, that's what I saw during my experience. So occasionally we see some astounding things like that. We had another person who was in, if you will, the library or hall of knowledge, and he saw these little round, silvery-looking discs, and absolutely for the world couldn't understand what that was all about. And only years and years after their near-death experience, CDs were discovered, and they said, aha. So that's how you can store a lot of knowledge in a small area like that. So occasionally we see these fascinating glimpses into the future, which over time some understanding comes about. So,
but obviously not very far into the future, because of course I'm sure that CDs were replaced by chips long ago on the other side. They certainly have been here. So it's interesting too when you mention that. You wonder, are they actually seeing what they think they're seeing, or is it symbolism for what they're seeing?
You know, it's really hard to say. You know, certainly the person that we're talking about, where they saw themselves, some individuals talking into clamshells at some future time, they believed they were seeing some future earthly life. And so certainly that seems to have been validated by subsequent inventions in history. You know, as far as some of the other imagery, you know, an awful lot of people, again, the great majority of near-death experiencers, when they have this experience, they're convinced it's not consistent with their prior belief system. It doesn't seem to be modified by their prior life experiences, or what they've been taught or what they've learned or what they believe would happen in a near-death experience. In fact, if you ask someone to construct, who'd never heard of near-death experience, to construct what would happen when they died, and then if they had a near-death experience, it would be strikingly dissimilar. So as best I can tell from looking at over 1,000 of these experiences, it seems to be something quite unrelated to what they thought would have happened or what they could have guessed.
Yeah, which actually validates it in many ways. Speaking of symbolism, getting to symbols, is there anything from the other side that a majority of people see, whether it's a symbol, a shape, or something that we normally don't see on Earth?
Huh, that's a really interesting question. I don't really recall, out of all the NDEs I've reviewed, seeing a specific shape or a symbol, you know, or something mystical like that, that people come back. It seems to be more concepts or understandings, often revolving around spiritual understandings. That seems to be way, way more common and way, way more consistent.
Right, so much more on the, again, on the thought pattern, on the ethereal, than anything that would be a physical depiction.
Yeah, absolutely. The heavenly, if you will, realms, you know, certainly can be variously identified, but they're generally described in terms of overwhelming beauty, flowers, for instance, of unearthly colors, you know, just panoramic landscapes that are literally their home, as they understand when they're standing there. So there's, you know, while there's a little bit of variability, there's one consistency, and that is their overwhelming beauty and the, you know, intensely positive feelings associated with being there.
Well, great. I think overwhelming is the key word here. Dr. Jeffrey Long is my guest. We're talking about near-death experiences. Check out nderf.org. I'm Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM.